Hey, how's it going? You're listening to episode 2 of The Sandler Files. I'm Jeremy, and this week, me and my co-host Max are talking about The Meyerowitz Stories, a Netflix original starring Adam Sandler. Check it out!
Oh, you married? Okay, sure. Was Uncle V vanilla ice this whole time?
You want a piece of me?
This is me. This is how I win.
How's it going, Max?
Hey, it's good.
Welcome back to The Sandler Files. This is episode 2, where we are discussing the Meyerowitz stories.
Yep.
It was a Netflix original. We just finished it, like, 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. This is one of the few critically acclaimed Sandler films, like, where it's not a comedy.
Well, it's not produced by his main production company. It's not Happy Madison. Yeah. It's a completely different filmmaker. It's by Noah Baumbach, who also did Marriage Story, another Netflix original that got some Oscar buzz recently.
Mm-hmm.
I say let's just talk about it, and I'll talk more about Noah Baumbach.
Sure. We don't know each other's opinions on this.
Yeah, really. I didn't want to discuss it in case we're vastly differing.
Yeah. So
right off the bat, I just want to say I was very meh on this movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was absolutely fine.
I thought it was maybe a bit better than fine.
Okay, that's fair.
But I agree with that. It wasn't horrible. Like, it wasn't bad.
No.
But it wasn't fantastic either.
It was very competently made. I just found... let's just start talking about it stylistically, I guess. We'll jump into that. I don't know how much we're going to touch on plot, because I don't know how much it affects your experience of the film. Like, the story is more a vehicle to deliver performances. Like, it's much more play-like,
mm-hmm.
I'd say.
Yeah, that's true.
The dialogue, I don't want to call it naturalistic. It wasn't natural at all, actually.
No, there was some.
It's like hyper real. Does that sound right to you? Like, it had the cadence of real human speech.
But it's not like what you would say to someone.
No, yeah. It's like very controlled.
That's true.
Yeah, it was a weird movie. It's a drama for sure. It's not a comedy,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot of like absurdist moments.
Kind of like dark comedy, I'd say.
Yeah,
Every
once in a while. Basically, if you're not familiar, the Meyerowitz Stories is about this family. The patriarch of this family is Harold Meyerowitz, who's an artist, a sculptor, and he's a huge narcissist and a pathological liar. And the movie basically is about his kids, his three kids, two from one marriage, one from another, and how growing up under this person has kind of shaped their childhoods and formed their adulthoods.
Yeah, pretty much. It's all about the father.
Yeah. I would say we are not necessarily the correct demographic for this movie.
I feel I would be more touched by this movie if I had a daughter and my dad was dying in a hospital.
Okay, well, that would be if you were like literally living the movie.
yeah.
That's the very basic plot of the movie. That's not a spoiler. That's
what Adam Sandler goes through.
Yeah,
and Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller doesn't have a daughter. He has a son.
Right.
Yeah, basically, if you're like middle aged and dealing with both raising a family and the family you knew when you were a child ending, that's kind of what this movie is about.
Yeah, that's definitely the energy that it pulls from.
Yeah, and so. Obviously, to us, that's not super relatable.
Yeah.
So I think that also kind of hinders the movie a little bit.
I think so. It takes away a lot of what the movie has, like that relatability.
Especially because the movie aims so much to be a realistic exploration of family dynamics. They're family dynamics that I personally haven't experienced.
Yeah.
I couldn't relate to the experience of having that father character at all.
No,
fortunately,
he's a bad father. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a terrible father. So, but like, it doesn't necessarily have to be relatable to work as a movie. It's just, it's so obsessed with being like life and like presenting kind of a slice of life, a moment in life, that I feel it really only works if you've kind of gone through that or something similar.
I think so. I feel it would be a lot more sad almost. It would draw more emotion out of you if you kind of relate to it more.
For sure.
I feel that's definitely what it goes for. And
I thought they were gonna pull some heartstrings. There's a scene early on where Adam Sandler's character, and we're gonna get into the three characters shortly because that's kind of the most interesting part of the movie for me at least. Adam Sandler's character, who has a daughter, they play this song on the piano together, and in the song they mention this mother, and the mom hasn't been present in the movie yet at that point. And I was like, oh, the mom died. Like, this is very tragic. This is how... It's like, nah, they just got a divorce. Everyone just got a divorce in this movie.
Because that's the director, right? He's divorced.
Yeah, because he made Marriage Story.
He has kids too, right? Yeah. Probably. So... I guess a lot of his movies draw from, like, his family issues.
Yeah, here's the thing about Noah Baumbach. I guess we'll talk about this now. I'm kind of familiar with his stuff. It's very popular in certain film circles. It's like... I don't know if this is rude to say. It's, like, exactly what you'd imagine a film student from New York would make.
Yeah.
Like...
Someone who is into drama as well.
Like, someone who is...
This drawed a lot from, like, onstage plays and stuff like that.
And, like, Woody Allen. Like, you can see a lot of, like, that kind of New York as a character influence. All his movies are set in New York. All his movies are about artists. All his movies are about dysfunctional families. And all his movies are about, like, middle class, like, kind of struggles in the art world. So it's, like...
Very defined.
Yeah, he's absolutely super defined. And you have to be a very specific person with a very specific sensibility to relate extremely to his movies. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I liked Marriage Story a lot.
I have not seen it.
It's pretty solid. It's not quite as good as something like Kramer versus Kramer, which is also about a divorce. But I don't like his movies tend to become, like, in my mind, performance showcases.
Yeah.
And so they're still enjoyable because of that. But I don't know if I'd necessarily recommend them for plot reasons.
Probably not. Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't say it, like, uses film to its advantage in any way.
No, it could be a play.
It's literally organized like a play, and the whole soundtrack is just piano.
Yeah,
like a play would, like someone playing off stage. It's organized in acts,
and there's
essentially it's a play. I feel like this is a play script.
Yeah, there was literally like acts that came up on screen. Also, the thing I noticed is blocking wise with a lot of the characters, they move back and forth a lot. Which is like what you do on stage to show intention, like the pacing. Yeah. It's like you have this whole depth of a medium of you can go anywhere and you're moving within this like 8-foot location. Like, I don't know, it was very weird to me. There's a lot of weird touches to the movie that I actually was not a fan of, like weird moments where it's like a lot of long takes and then suddenly there will be a moment of like really choppy editing.
Random
zoom ins.
It's fast paced editing, but in my opinion, it's not done well.
Yeah, I don't think the editing was in service to the script very much. Honestly, this movie doesn't have a lot of fun elements to talk about.
No, really.
It's a real downer.
It's depressing. Everyone just goes through depressing stuff.
It's just like middle-aged malaise, the movie. I don't know. Let's talk about the performances of Adam Sandler and the other comedian in the movie, Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
And then I think let's just move on because... I think so.
That's pretty much all we can talk about.
It's not a fun movie to talk about. But Adam Sandler, I thought, was solid, but he's definitely delivered better dramatic performances before.
Yeah.
This was not a massive stretch for him.
Not really. I noticed it's a very similar performance to Uncut Gems, almost.
Really?
Maybe not similar performance, but the situations he's in... Just the way the movie kind of keeps chugging and stuff keeps happening to this character and he's just all caught up in it and he doesn't know what to do about it. That's sort of like Uncut Gems in that way.
That's very interesting. That comparison might come back up later. Yes. I might have some things to say about
that. Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But I will say he did this, like, his character has a limp, which is a physical affectation that's actually, like, really hard to pull off. And I think he did pretty solidly.
He did. I didn't even think about that yet. That looks really good.
Yeah, he did really good on that. And, like, there was a lot of genuine emotion. And also his character, the way it's written in the script, has a lot of, like, emotional heel turns. He gets very angry very quickly. And he did that very well as well. Like, it was a very solid performance. But, like, nothing... And it was captivating. He's like a super magnetic screen presence. I always forget that.
Yeah, I love when he acts like, seriously, when he does like a really well done character.
Yeah,
he dives into a normal movie character.
Right? Yeah, and he did really good with this one. But just because the material wasn't super interesting to me, like there weren't a lot of standout moments. I found myself watching when he was on screen. By the way, this is a very unpopular opinion on this movie. This movie is very well regarded.
I feel like for a lot of people, this is probably the first serious Adam Sandler role.
I don't even...
It was the first Netflix one, right? Like, the first time he'd ever done it, dropped onto streaming?
A serious role? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's just that. I think it's the clout of the director, Noah Baumbach.
Oh, right.
That This movie was at... I'm getting into our trivia section, so there won't be a lot of trivia on this movie, I guess. But it was at Cannes, the French Film Festival, or Cannes. I don't know how to pronounce it. I don't want to sound...
I think it's Cannes, isn't it?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm
not sure. No, wait, maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, whatever. Maybe. It doesn't matter. It got a 4-minute standing ovation after it
really,
which doesn't mean much, because a lot of movies that go there get standing ovations. But like,
again, I'm saying I think it's because Adam Sandler's in it, and the general movie-going public is used to just, know what they're used to from Sandler, right? I feel someone's gonna watch this movie and go, "Oh my god, the director pulled that out of Adam Sandler." I'm gonna clap for 4 minutes.
I get that, but also. Punch Drunk Love exists, which came out in 2003, and when we watch that, I think you'll change your tune a little bit, because really? It's insane. That performance is insane. Okay. I think he should have. I low key think he should have won an Oscar for Punch Drunk Love.
But I feel the people who didn't see Punch Drunk Love.
Okay, of the film world.
For me, it was Uncut Gems.
Right.
Right. When you're introduced to serious Adam Sandler, you go, oh my god.
Why doesn't he do this all the time?
It's so much better. He's such a good actor, right?
So here's my take on it. I think it was Ben Stiller's performance, which I think was... The reason I can't overpraise Adam Sandler for this movie is Ben Stiller stole it from me.
Yeah, I agree. Dude,
he was amazing.
I was not expecting that.
He was so good.
Like the Zoolander.
Yeah. Like, doing this. The Marty the Lion or whatever. Is he Marty in those movies? Alex the Lion from Madagascar. Yeah, yeah. Like, pulling real emotion out of me. Like, there's a scene at the end where he breaks down that is, like, truly heart-wrenching.
He was so good, dude.
He was fantastic in this movie. Ben Stiller, definitely the highlight of this movie.
I think I'd agree. His character was super interesting, too.
Like, yeah. I just as soon as he came him. On I screen, I was like, oh, finally some life in this movie.
Because the first scene he's in is he's talking with Adam Driver, like a little cameo.
Yeah, which is right? great. Which is
and
great.
Now it's just kind of a burst of energy, like, wow, this is...
Yeah.
You're immediately interested. I think it was great, yeah.
I agree. I burned through most of my trivia there. I don't have any left.
Oh, shit, all right.
But so closing thoughts on the movie. It wasn't really for me. It's just like...
I don't think it was for me either.
I feel like it's not a great movie to watch this year. So emotionally draining, and like, I don't know about you, but I've been on this like ebbs and flows of like my own emotions without movies affecting them, and I just find when I want to watch something, I just purely want to be entertained.
I feel a lot of people want escapism right now.
Exactly. Like,
that's definitely the same thing here.
So I can't recommend it if you're feeling a similar way where you want something fun, because it's not one of those dramas where like it's a warm ending.
No,
it's just it's like life, like the it's movie just happens ends.
And the characters react to it.
Yeah,
and it's interesting stuff happens,
I guess.
Yeah, but in my opinion, it's out of the ordinary. It's not like a guy goes to work, but
yeah, I'm not the biggest Noah Baumbach fan. I've only seen two movies of his, and I'm already kind of tired of his shtick. We'll see if he can do some more.
Because it's very similar to Marriage Story, right?
Yeah, oh, it's so... Like, you have no idea.
Like, stylistically?
Yeah, Marriage Story is, like, the aspect ratio is changed. But outside of that, yeah, it's, like, the same movie. In my opinion. This is not a popular opinion at all. He's super well-respected and well-regarded.
Well, he's definitely, for sure, he's got a style that he really likes to stick to. And yeah. Really,
and people love that style.
Yeah.
It's not personally for me, but that's fine. I
think this is for, like, if you're a fan of, like, live theater. Again, just the comparisons to that. Like, you pointed that out. I feel if you're really into live theater, this plays by those rules.
Yeah. So, if you're looking for kind of a more serious character piece, and you like Adam Sandler, and you want to see Ben Stiller deliver a great performance, we didn't even talk about Dustin Hoffman. He's in this movie, too.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The dad. I don't know.
He plays such a good jerk, I think.
Yeah,
like I just got because you're thinking
you recognize him from Chef.
Oh, I forgot he was in Chef.
He's the jerk in Chef. Yeah,
I thought he's a good jerk. I think he's a good, like, you feel bad for him because he's like an old guy.
I didn't feel I don't like
there's
him.
Like you hate him.
Yeah,
but then also you get the feeling like imagine if this is your dad and you have those weird ties to him where it's like, well, you can't just abandon him because that's not the right thing to do.
Adam Sandler and Ben Stiller both did a great job, I think, of conveying, like, wordlessly a lot. We didn't even talk about the other sibling. I don't know the actress very well.
I thought she was funny. Like,
she was really funny.
Yeah.
And she had a really strong moment. Her name's, like, Elizabeth Smart, I think, but she's not given much to do in the movie, unfortunately. But yeah, that's also...
they kind of leave her to the sidelines.
But that's kind of, like, the point, I think, because of her character within the plot. So there's not much to say on her, but she also... Like, all the performances in this movie are very solid.
Yeah.
So, yes, I would recommend it if the things that I've said make you think, oh, I would want to watch this.
It's for a specific audience, for sure.
Unfortunately, it wasn't for me. I don't know if it's just the vibe I'm in today or whatever.
I'm on the line. I'm on the line. At the start, I thought it was going somewhere good, and then it kind of... Almost like Hubie Halloween.
Like,
the first few scenes, I thought, hey, this is kind of nice. Like, I like this, what this is doing.
The exact same rating as Hubie Halloween.
Yeah?
No. That's unfair. I gave Hubie Halloween a 6.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say this is a 7 out of 10 for
7.5.
Okay. But on the Sandler scale, I'd give it a 9.
Yeah. Just because he's, like, acting.
Because he's trying.
Yeah.
It's refreshing. Yeah, I don't have much trivia to say. Can we do the trivia intro and then immediately the outro? Because I don't have any trivia.
Okay, all right.
There is no trivia today. There we go. But I do have a review.
That's right. Google reviews. I should make a little jingle for this.
Okay. We are back to the number one place on the internet for cinema reviews, Google Plus reviews, and I've got one here. It's not like the one last week where it's like, what happened here? This is more one that I think will spark some interesting discussion between you and I, because I vehemently disagree with it. I think I know how you feel about it. So this reviewer said, now that I've seen this movie, I feel that Adam Sandler stole a lot of ideas from Noah Baumbach for his movie Uncut Gems. Many of the same actors in both as well.
Who else is in?
I don't think there's anyone. So I think that's...
I didn't recognize... I don't know.
Maybe that is. LJ guy. I don't think there's any crossover from what I remember of both.
That guy said it. You were asleep. You were asleep for an hour of Uncut Gems, okay?
That's not fair to me.
It's what happened, all right? It's life.
But let's talk about that a little bit. I know we haven't done Uncut Gems yet, so we won't say anything about that too far.
Yeah.
But I disagree because I know the history of Uncut Gems, so I know that's just untrue.
That's because Adam Sandler didn't do either of these projects. He wasn't the mind behind either.
Exactly. And the Safdie brothers, who did Uncut Gems, wrote that script in like 2003.
Yeah, that's true. Because they'd been pitching that to him for like years.
Yeah. So
we can talk a lot about Uncut Gems. There's so much interesting stuff about that, I think.
So it wasn't that...
In the Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you feel thematically they're similar?
Not thematically.
Structurally, I guess? You were talking about his character arc.
The experience. I don't know if that's a good term.
Were you as anxious watching this as you were watching Uncut Gems?
Sorry, the door just blew open a little bit. No, not as anxious. Absolutely not. There was a little bit of that.
Okay.
Right? Where it's Adam...
Any scene with the dad put me on edge.
Because the dad's just talking to everybody, being a nuisance in restaurants and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just the way where he's constantly saying stuff, bringing up new topics, just piling more and more on. That's similar to, like, what Uncut Gems does.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have anything else to say about this movie.
Neither do I.
I feel bad. But I just...
There's no reason to feel bad.
It just exists.
It's not funny to talk about. This is not...
Yeah, this has not been an entertaining discussion.
No.
Let's move on. Let's just move on. We're washing our hands of it.
All right.
Play the Sand Sandler.
Sand Sandler. Yes.
Max, we have been watching some content to get prepared for this week because I predicted that we would have almost this exact reaction to this movie.
Yes, it's true. You were correct.
So, what we did, a new movie came out this week that rocked the political landscape a little bit. And we did a little double feature to prepare for that. if you're not aware, Borat 2.
Borat 2, ladies and gentlemen, let's play the jingle. Or Borat 1 and 2. Play the Borat 1 and 2.
We're talking about both.
Play the double Borat jingle.
It's the Sandler Files, double Borat spectacular. My wife.
Okay.
Did it play?
Yeah, it played.
Oh, okay.
You didn't hear that?
No.
Okay, well, I don't. Maybe you should.
So, Borat, if you're not aware, Borat's subsequent movie film came out this week.
Yes.
And Max and I have been big Borat fans for decades.
Decades, yeah. I remember.
I remember being a little boy sitting on my father's knee, and mm-hmm. he brought me in to see Borat in theaters.
Yeah. And my first words were actually my wife.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's true.
My first words were the full Kazakhstan national anthem from the film.
That's impressive.
It was really impressive.
That is nice.
The doctors were impressed because I was six, and it was the first words I'd ever said.
The doctors were impressed with me, too, because I was like, it was like a few minutes old. Okay, listen, let's give some background on our Borat experience, all right?
Okay,
our realistic Borat experience. Because for, I guess, years now, we've kind of mocked, like, huge Borat fans.
Well, because we didn't grow up around the time that it was big. So the whole, like, culture of being like, very nice.
Haha, quoting Borat all the time. It became a bit, like, to pretend
We would ironically like that. Pretend that we loved Borat to our friends to bother them.
Yeah.
I think there was one night where you and I just came up with words that rhymed with my wife and just delivered them in the Borat voice for like an hour.
Oh, that's, yeah, I remember that.
Was one I laughed so hard, but everyone else hated us.
But I think part of the bit was that
We promised
we would never watch Borat.
We said we would never ever watch it.
Because then that makes our bit unfunny.
But then they announced Borat 2.
Yes.
And we thought, well, we have to watch Borat 2.
We have to watch Borat 1 to
understand. I didn't want to watch Borat 1. I said we need to watch Borat 2 with no context
because
it won't ruin the bit. But I was wrong.
There was plot. There was plot.
We watched Borat 1 first.
Yeah.
And then we watched Borat 2. Should we go Borat 1 first?
Sure. Let's talk about
it. I don't remember it that well anymore. It was a few weeks ago.
It was, the main character is Borat. I don't know if you, I don't know if you remember.
Who?
Borat. He says my wife. He says funny my wife.
The first one is an incredible comedy just in terms of pacing.
Yeah, we weren't really expecting it to be like as good as it
is. It's amazing when he gets people to say, it's amazing that it's actually funny, like the narrative through line of the movie, which shouldn't work at all, is actually funny and investing.
Yeah, it's
and
entertaining. It's actually genius.
Like I get it now.
Yeah.
And I hate that I get it, but I fully get it.
Yeah. We won't be obnoxious about it, we promise.
No, every week on this podcast,
we're going to have the Borat hour of the podcast.
Yeah, we're going to have a Borat impression off
yes.
for 20 uninterrupted minutes. It was great.
I loved Borat. I loved his producer, too.
Oh, yeah.
They were great together.
The dichotomy between them.
Yeah. Sorry, you were saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, if you haven't seen it, I would really recommend watching it.
Same here. Absolutely. Just the way that the character of Borat gets like people on the street to kind of say the worst things that they actually mean.
Yeah.
Is incredible. Like, there are some terrible people in this movie. He goes down the, like, right through the middle of the United States from New York to California.
A lot of people sued over the movie because they didn't like the way they were represented. I mean, yeah, some of the stuff in that movie was appalling, but I'd say the stuff in the second one is even more appalling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He definitely goes bigger.
So, if you're not familiar with Borat, the character is a reporter from Kazakhstan. He goes to America to try to learn how they have such a great government in the first one, semi-satirically. And Sacha Baron Cohen, as that character, interacts with a bunch of real-life people and gets them to say terrible things on camera and gets them to do embarrassing things on camera.
Yeah.
And somehow pieces it together into a larger narrative about Borat trying to find and marry the girl from Baywatch, Pamela Anderson.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
he has the relationship with that prostitute as well.
Yeah.
That fills up.
It's insane. It shouldn't work, but it does.
Yeah.
And it's very entertaining.
It's really good how it flows, like, the on-the-streets comedy with written comedy as well.
And people have tried to mimic it. Like, Johnny Knoxville did that movie Bad Grandpa.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have done similar stuff.
It's never worked.
No, not really.
Like, this
Eric
way.
Andre did one, too. Bad Trip, he did. And that's like, it's fine.
Yeah.
So, like, they're good. The other ones that try to do it are good, but they're nothing like this.
So it's insane that it worked. And so going into the second one, I think my big fear, even though I was a very recent Borat fan,
yeah,
was like, no one else has been able to pull this off again. Can they do it again? This is a comedy sequel. Yeah,
how's this going to work, right?
15 years later, comedy sequels don't work.
Yeah, usually.
Absolutely. Like Dumb and Dumber 2 or Zoolander 2. You know, there's evidence
it's
of this.
It's the death sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not only that, but they were introducing this character of Borat's daughter, the trailer showed in the second one, mm-hmm. which is like, you're introducing a new character that's supposed to be like the new Borat. Like, that's never going to work.
Yeah, that could go horribly wrong.
And the other big problem that a Borat 2 would face is, how do you deal with the fact that everybody knows who Borat is now? Like, he's so culturally ingrained. People immediately recognize that costume and that face. So the movie gets around that in some really clever ways.
I can tell, like, definitely Sacha Baron Cohen, when he was planning this, thought of these things
mm-hmm.
and figured out how to get around them. And I think it went perfect.
So in a lot of the movie, Borat is not... It's still Borat. Like, Sacha Baron Cohen, who is a British man, is doing an impression of a man from Kazakhstan, and that man is doing an impression of Americans.
Yeah, he disguises himself. He gets prosthetics and...
It's insane, but it works.
Yeah.
There's less messing with people on the street in this movie, and that's partially because it was harder for him to do it, and partially because the pandemic hits halfway through the filming of this movie.
It was perfectly timed when they started filming, because the movie begins, and the pandemic's slightly coming on, and then, yeah, halfway through it...
Lockdown hits.
It's insane. And they deal with it. It's awesome.
That leads to one of the most impressive sequences of the film, which is when Sacha Baron Cohen lives with these two random, like, Southern Republicans in their cabin in the woods somewhere.
Yeah.
I read that Sacha Baron Cohen didn't leave character for 5 days.
So it really was 5 days.
Yeah, he was with them for 5 days.
That's so funny.
And he stays as Borat the whole time. He said it was the most difficult sequence for him to film.
Oh, man.
And that is also one of the scenes where you get some of the most insane things said in the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The conspiracies they spout about Democrats and the Clintons and all this stuff.
The virus.
Like, it's stuff you read online and you're like, I can't believe people would think this. But then these people who open their home to this random guy, Borat, and like, let him in, let him live with them, that seems like a very kind thing to do.
Yeah.
But then they're saying these abhorrent things. It's
like they're saying very mean things about people, but then at the same time, yeah, they're letting this guy stay with them
for 5 days that they met on the street.
Yeah, it's, from a foreign country too.
It's bizarre, honestly. There's a lot of sequences like that in the movie, mm-hmm. But the other way they get around a lot of stuff is they have Borat's daughter go in instead of Borat.
Yes,
to do,
yes. And she was awesome.
Yeah, Borat's daughter is played by Maria Balakova, who's a Bulgarian actress, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
She's not known at all in the United States. I had never heard of her before. Or Canada, I guess, because that's where we are. She's not a known actress, but she was able to keep up with Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah, I thought that was crazy how good she was.
Like, she never broke. Or at least we didn't... Obviously, it's edited. Like, they could have done stuff where she... But
the ones that they include in the movie, she's online with Borat. Like,
yeah, she keeps up with him, which is insane. And the interesting thing is, I'd say this movie, we talked a little bit how in the first one they managed to tie everything together into a cohesive plot that's actually entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
This one's even better about that.
Yeah, I think so.
The plot they build up is even stronger and emotionally richer.
The way that things roll out in the candid filming starts to tie into the plot.
Yeah.
Like the way Borat treats his daughter. He learns things from the people that they mess with.
In an even stronger way than the first, which is a huge testament to this film. I think this is the most relevant film, like, I have ever, like, witnessed.
Yeah.
Like, there's documentaries that come out, like, when An Inconvenient Truth came out, which is an Al Gore documentary about environmentalism, 2004, like, it really shook a lot of people. This is probably the most, like, timely and politically relevant movie I have ever, like, seen and been a part of at the time that
same,
it came out.
Same here. Because you're watching it and you're like, oh, this is just what's happening right now.
Yeah, it's... I mean, in a lot of ways, it's interesting that we had such a positive reaction to it. When I say something about Meyerowitz Stories, which is like, oh, I didn't, because of the year we've had, like, I didn't necessarily enjoy this movie as much because it's such a, like, drab experience.
This is the perfect movie because it makes fun of the year.
But it's insane because it's like, it's almost like it's bashing you over the head with, like, a highlight reel of all the stuff we've had to deal with this year.
Yeah.
But it's also so entertaining and, like, yeah. I don't know, it's weird.
I feel like it's just the character of Borat, like, the way he just kind of strolls through all these topics.
Yeah, the way he responds to them. The other thing that I will say is a huge testament to this movie is, and I think it helps with this year, is not every interaction he has, or not every interaction he has with people he meets on the streets, is negative. He's edited in some of the ones where people treated him with kindness.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a scene in a synagogue that I don't want to spoil.
It was awesome.
It is very moving when you hear about the backstory behind it as well. And I don't know, it's weird, but this is like maybe one of my favorite movies that came out this year. I mean, I guess that makes sense.
Out of all four of them.
Yeah, you know, top grossing this movie this year right now is Sonic the Hedgehog, followed directly behind by Doolittle and then Bad Boys for Life.
Yeah.
That's the year we're having in movies. So I think that's fair to say that this is one of the best movies
I think so. You're going to see this year. This might be my favorite one so far because I can't even think of other movies I've seen.
Yeah. It's on Amazon Prime Video, if you're wondering where you can watch it. I'd really recommend it. There is some gross out humor, especially in the first half.
Mm.
But it was a really solid follow-up to the original. Legitimately, I don't want to say moving, like I wasn't close to tears, but it gets you emotionally invested.
Yeah, I think so. That's a good way to put it.
And it's a very strong story, and it kind of sticks with you. Like, I've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, same here. Because it just kind of frames the world right now in a new way, in the Borat way.
And if you've heard anything about the Rudy Giuliani scene at the end, near the end of the movie,
oh my god,
if you're wondering how real that is, what's been claimed about it, I don't think we can say what it is here.
No.
To get around it a little bit,
I say just go watch it. Yeah. See what happens.
There's a very interesting scene with Rudy Giuliani. If you don't know what happens, it's insane.
I can't believe it.
It's insane. And that's what the U.S. government has come to. Wow.
Yep.
But highly recommend. Max, what would you give it out of 10 My Wives?
9 out of 10 My Wives.
Wow. I think that's fair. I'd stick with that too. The first half isn't as good as the first movie. The pacing isn't as good. But outside of that, it's like a really, really solid follow-up.
I think so. Yeah. If you like Borat 1, you will like Borat 2.
That's what we found.
Yeah.
Have we seen anything else this week? In the week since we last talked about what we were watching?
What?
Dude, that scared me so much.
Knob on this door.
Oh my god, I almost had a heart attack. We are being haunted.
And the door is open 2 times during this podcast.
I think it's the Halloween spirit because it's still not quite Halloween.
It's the ghost of Borat's producer, for sure.
I forgot about that. Oh, the end twist of Borat 2 is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
We watched some more Cobra Kai. I don't have much to say about that.
Yeah, we watched... There was a lame episode and then a pretty good episode.
That's a great review.
Yeah.
I don't want to make this a Sacha Baron Cohen episode, but I watched some of his Showtime show, Who is America?
Yeah.
Which is very similar to Borat 2. And like,
I've been meaning to check that out, yeah.
Oh my god, it's even more insane than Borat.
Really?
It's ridiculous.
I've seen this one clip where it's like, he's at a town hall meeting.
That's the exact one.
We're going to build a mod.
That's the exact one.
That is, I love that.
It is the most insane, the fact that these people can say the things that come out of their mouth without actually just immediately lighting on fire is insane to me.
Yeah, he wore a bulletproof vest during that too, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I watched that as well.
Yeah, that's great. I want to watch that whole thing.
That's all I got for Sandler.
Yeah.
Any movie news? Oh, yes, there is. Adam Sandler is filming a new movie.
Oh, that's right.
I almost forgot about this.
We know about... Yeah, I... Damn.
What is it called? Hustle? It's his next Netflix film. And this one weirdly looks kind of serious in tone. From the two images we have, I don't think it's a comedy fully. I think it's a dramedy.
I don't know what to think about this from the information we have. Here's the plot. It's literally like a sentence what the plot is so far. The plot is, it follows the story of a former basketball recruiter who tries to make his career by bringing a player from overseas to the from overseas to the United States to play in the NBA.
Yeah.
I don't know what to think about this.
I don't know. It's just, it's, I mean, I'm sure we'll know more when the trailer comes
out. So it's set in New York, right?
Yeah.
That's a given.
It's crazy to me that they're filming it right now.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. It's another serious.
This is it? Serious, we don't know if it's serious. It's, yeah, it's Happy Madison produced.
That's true.
So.
That's true. Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's the next one in his Netflix deal with Happy Madison.
Okay, that's weird.
So it's not Murder Mystery 2 as I was predicting.
It's a new movie. It has none of his
regular stars so far from what we've seen.
I mean,
but
Queen
again,
Latifah's in it.
Yeah,
Robert Duvall.
Queen Latifah. Robert Duvall's in it.
Yeah.
Yo.
And Ben Foster.
Yo, that movie's gonna slap.
I don't know what to think.
I'm super excited for Hustle.
It's a old Adam Sandler character who cares about basketball.
Do you think he's gonna do a voice? Voice or no voice?
No voice. No.
Yeah, I don't think he's
gonna. I feel this is riding off of Uncut Gems.
Really?
His character was all about basketball in that movie.
Yeah, I don't. Well, his character was a gambler. Yeah, we talk about Uncut Gems too much for a podcast where we haven't seen Uncut Gems yet. That I'm very excited for. That's going to be out sometime next year, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to see what it is. Like, I genuinely have no idea what the plot, like, what kind of tone it's going to strike. Like, Hubie Halloween, you read the description, you were like, oh, okay, I kind of know what this is. It was exactly what I expected. But this one looks different, and I'm excited for it.
I have a special guest.
You have a special guest?
Yeah. He's mic'd up right now.
Max, you brought so much to this episode that I had no idea about. Okay, hit me with
Sitting at home right now. I'm going to line him in.
What is this?
You're going to freak.
Okay.
You're going to freak.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing to the podcast, Borat. Here he is. He's on the call.
There's no way that's actually him.
Hello, Borat?
Hi, it's me, Borat.
Oh, there he is.
Oh my god, I'm such a huge fan. This is insane.
Let me just start off saying, Borat, it's such an honor to have you on here.
Okay.
Do you have any
questions for me?
Yeah, sure. I didn't really prepare anything, but
that seems like an error on your part.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize, but where do you get your ideas from?
Movies.
Okay. Do you have any funny stories from the set of Borat?
Yes. I would love a classic funny story.
Yeah, actually, I do. One time, I asked the assistant director to get me a bologna sandwich, but she got me turkey, so I had her fired.
Oh.
That's very interesting.
Yeah,
Do you have any more questions?
I'm sure a lot of the fans listening at home would love to hear some of your classic Borat quotes. Do you think you could give us some of those?
Right, I forgot. My spouse.
Was that it?
Doesn't he
was
say
that?
My wife?
I have to go.
Okay. Well, it was great. It was great having you on. We'd love to have you back sometime. Like, honestly.
I'll think about it. I'm very busy.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Well. Thank you very much, Borat, for coming on.
Yeah.
Okay, he left the call.
Wow, Max, I can't believe you actually got Borat for the podcast.
That was real life Borat. Didn't know he was real, actually, but it turns out we were wrong.
That was a hilarious message from one of my favorite reporters. But now do you know what time it is, Max Dreesen?
What time is it? Because my clock says 8:26 p.m.
Oh, God, it's getting late. I have an assignment due soon. But it's time to spin the wheel of Sandler. I'm really hoping we get a better movie because I feel bad because I didn't have much to say this week on anything outside of Borat.
Hold on, let's play the cue for the wheel.
Oh, sorry. Play the cue.
The wheel.
What is that?
It's Jack and Jill.
What? Yes!
Yo! We got Jack and Jill!
Oh my god!
Hey everybody! We got Jack and Jill!
Jack and Jill! Jack and Jill! Jack and Jill!
Jack and Jill! Jack and Jill!
Jack and Jill!
Oh my god!
So I guess next week we're going to be talking about Jack and Jill, which we are a little bit excited about.
Yep.
Actually, Jack and Jill holds a special place in the heart of this podcast for a very specific reason, which we can talk about next week, I guess, when we talk about the movie.
That's right. All will be revealed.
Yes. So be sure to tune in next week to the Sandler Files. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Sorry if it was a little meandering. We didn't really know how to tackle a drama.
Mm-hmm.
But we appreciate you listening. I've been Jeremy Conte.
And I've been Max.
And do you not have a last name?
No. Oh, I actually got it removed since last episode.
That's incredible. Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week.
But my wife.
Shut up. Bye.